Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
He owns and operates the Pack-A-Day podcast that airs 365 days a year with over 12 million views on YouTube. A new adventure begins. It's time for the Pack-A-Day radio show with Andy Herman on 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook and on the free Odyssey app.
It all started off preparing each week and going through the motions and going through what we need to do every week at practice. So just following my coach's instructions and just simple it down to the details.
And what is this team capable of?
A lot. Just like Josh said, the work that everybody putting in, we all want it bad. We all want it bad.
It is Victory Freaking Monday. Welcome in, everybody, to the Pack-A-Day radio show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. It is great to be chatting Packers with you guys. I'm Andy Herman. We've got Ryan Horvath coming up at 8:20 a.m. today, BetMGM tonight. Excited to talk to him about this Packers victory over the Seattle Seahawks, 30-13. Would also love for you to join the show. I know you've got some Victory Monday hot takes, some Victory Monday questions. Get them in. You can join us on the Nicolay Law Fan Talk and Text line, 414-677-1250. Again, that's 414-677-1250. You should have a bunch of time in our third segment today for those questions, but shoot me the text, give me those phone calls, and we'll try to get to as much as we can throughout the course of today's show. Of course, the key takeaway today, the Packers are winners. They win in Seattle 30-13. I've got five sort of takeaways from this game. Before I get to Tommy, at Victory Monday, how are you doing, my friend?
Oh my gosh, that was awesome, Andy. It was just such a beautiful first half. The second half got a little dicey, a little scary during it, but virtually no worry in the game at all. And I love that about Packer games.
What's Tommy's takeaway from this Victory Monday from the Packers win over Seattle?
I think my key takeaway is that the Xavier McKinney signing is the third best acquisition the Packers made in this offseason behind Josh Jacobs and Jeff Hafley.
Interesting. That's a spicy take. I like it, though. I like what all... there's so many big additions this offseason. I mean, can you imagine this team without Jeff Hafley, without Josh Jacobs, without Xavier McKinney, without Edgerrin Cooper, without Evan Williams, even without Javon Bullard? That's a pretty decent offseason for one little offseason. Even in-season, right? Malik Willis, Brandon McManus. There's been some pretty big additions to this team. Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst have done a tremendous job in making this team even better and hopefully taking a step further from where they were a season ago. I have five key takeaways in this one. All right, number one, let's start with this. It is this offense in general. It's so interesting. four consecutive 30-point performances. Four consecutive 30-point performances. They're one of the top offenses in all of football, regardless of whatever metric that you want to look at, points per game, DVOA, it doesn't matter. Whatever metric you want to use, top five offense pretty much in all of football. Again, four consecutive 30-point games. Just as a, if you just want to compare for a second, those Kansas City Chiefs, who have one loss on the season, you may have heard of them. They've won a couple Super Bowls. They've got Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, those sort of guys. They have zero 30-point games this season. They have yet to score 30 points in a game. The Packers have done it four consecutive times. Yet, it still feels like there is so much left on the bone for this Packers offense. It feels like if they could play a four-quarter game and just go out and execute the way that we have seen them execute in spurts, man, it feels like they could put up 50 points and it wouldn't even be breaking a sweat. Like, that's the type of offense this team has. And it's so interesting because you look at the final net outcome and what they're doing on offense, and it's really, really, really good. And then you go through these like stretches, for example, in the middle of that game, Tommy, where you're talking about, all right, it seemed a little dicey there for a minute. 3 plays, 2 yards punt, 2 plays, 6 yards fumble, 3 plays, 4 yards punt, 7 plays, 45 yards turnover on downs. Against Detroit, that opening sequence or the opening, series, you had punt, punt, fumble, or punt, punt, turnover, however you want to view it, in that opening sequence or opening few drives against Detroit. Against a team like Detroit, that's enough to cost you the game. Those three drives at the beginning of the game ultimately kind of cost the Packers an opportunity to win that game. Now, in this one, it comes later, but it's punt, fumble, punt, turnover on downs against a good team that probably gets you beat. But it still is unbelievable that they're still putting up 30-plus points week in and week out, and there's so much more out there. And I think that is really what sort of sets the ceiling for you and gets you so excited, because you understand that this team is almost putting up 30 points just in there, even like sleepwalking through parts of the game, not even always clicking on all cylinders, and they're capable of doing it. So imagine what they can do if they actually put a full four-quarter performance together. So there's so much more out there. And then I talked about this a little bit on the podcast today. All right, I'll ask you this, Tommy. What did you think? You don't even need to know any of the game, all right? What do you immediately think of when I tell you that the Ravens beat the Giants 35-14? Well, how do you feel about the Ravens, winning that game 35-14?
Duh is the first word that comes to my mind, I guess.
Okay. It's just like a ho-hum. They took care of business, went to New York, and did everything. Like, that's a really good victory for the Ravens, right? Like, that's a, like, you wouldn't even think twice about it, right?
Yeah, they need that victory. Like,
yeah,
that.
Of course. And here's how I was like, you look at the Ravens, 35-14, 21-point win over the Giants, and you're not like caveating it with anything. You're not saying like, well, yeah, but like Tim Boyle was in, or yeah, they were, the Giants are the worst team in football. They're set to get the number one draft pick. You're just like, yep, that's the Ravens taking care of business, 35-14. That's exactly what you expect. Good team to going on the road and taking down a bad Giants team. You're not saying like, anything like, oh, that could have been a little bit better, whatever. You're just looking at that score and you'll be like, yep, that is a take care of business game. Good for the Ravens. That's exactly what you'd expect out of them. Green Bay, 30-13. Every other fan across the league is going like, man, they went into Seattle and they took care of business in Seattle. 30-13, game was never close. Nobody else is looking at it and being like, well, yeah, but Sam Howell got in the game, or, but yeah, like, the Seahawks didn't play their best football, or, but yeah, Green Bay could have won by, no, it's just a really good win on the road against a Seattle team that had everything to play for. Like, that team goes from, in at least the current playoff picture, they would have been in the playoffs, in the lead in the NFC West if they win that game. And right now, they are out of the playoffs. They can still get back in, obviously. There's 3 weeks left in the season. They're not eliminated. But that is a huge difference from, again, having a huge leg up in the NFC West to now being on the outside looking in. They had everything to play for in that game. And Green Bay just went into their house and just smacked them around for the most part for four quarters, albeit a little sleepwalky in the third and early fourth quarters in this one, especially on offense. But they go in and they get the win. And I thought it was a really impressive victory overall. I think there's a lot of positive takeaways from this one.
Well, Andy, also, How about the Packer fans showing up?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was, I haven't seen that on the road maybe ever in Green Bay. Like, that was something that was, Seattle is known for being loud, ruckus, 12th man, right? And the Packer fans were drowning out Seattle fans throughout the game.
That's a game where if it's in Vegas, if it's in LA, if it's in one of those, that doesn't have like a home field advantage, like, you don't even really think twice about it. I was at, this is back in the day, this is going to certainly age me to some extent. I was at a game in St. Louis at the time when the Rams were in St. Louis. And then that field was a home field advantage. I mean, I still remember Steven Jackson talking after the game of like, how is this even a thing that can happen? That like, we're at a home game and it's a Packers home game. And he was so frustrated by it. I mean, it just changes the dynamic entirely. And you again, expect that maybe from one of those more quote unquote kind of like neutral stadiums. You don't expect that in Seattle. It's known for the 12th man. That, you know, even like John Ryan, probably game, you know, obviously was on the Fan right here last week with Mason Crosby and Mitch Nellis. Like when he's doing the thing pregame, it seems like a raucous crowd in Seattle. I thought Chris Collinsworth did a great job of you know, kind of reminding you of like, if you want to take a crowd out of the game, just go down and run the football right down their throats. And it is a demoralizing feeling because it's just 5 yards, 6 yards, 4 yards, 3 yards, 8 yards, 12 yards, 3 yards. And it's just like, you can't do anything about it. And it just goes from like, I am super pumped about this game to, oh, yep, they just ran it literally right down our throats. And then, you know, Seattle gives it right back. Green Bay goes down and gets another touchdown right away. And Seattle's crowd was out of it. And again, I am so impressed with the fact that even early on, even like first drive in that game, you're hearing go Pack, go chants. It was really, really impressive. The 12th man in that game was the Packers fans. It was not the Seahawks fans. And that was really awesome, especially in a very, very hostile environment. I didn't expect that in Seattle. Again, maybe one of those other stadiums, not in Seattle. That was pretty freaking cool.
I agree completely. It was something that I like I said, I cannot imagine. The Jacksonville game wasn't like that this year. That's another stadium that's very notorious for opposing fans, or the Packer fans at least travel well. But I loved,
there's been some home games that haven't felt like that.
Right. I loved the fact that the run game really established early right away in the game for it, so that the fans could get an energy boost and the opposing fans could not find it. So I thought that was really what stood out to me from the beginning of the game to the end of the game. And like you said, that doesn't happen at Lambeau sometimes.
Yeah, it was really, really impressive. All right, my other takeaways in this one, number two, Edgerrin freaking Cooper, 7 tackles, 1 sack, 2 TFLs, 2 PBUs, 2 QB hits, 1 interception, a partridge in a pear tree on only 34 snaps on defense. Only played 34 snaps on defense. Clearly that needs to go up. Now, I think a couple things. One, he's coming back from injury. Probably didn't want to put him in too much. Although they had no issues putting him in on special teams, which also, by the way, on teams, he had 2 tackles. And if you remember that big hit by Eric Wilson as well, Cooper set that up by getting down there first, kind of holding up the returner a little bit, and then Wilson absolutely leveled him. So he was active on special teams as well. Just an absolute stud. I cannot say enough about Edgerrin Cooper. You can tell there's still some things that he is working on from like an alignment standpoint, from knowing his assignments, all those sort of things. Those things will come with time. I mean, just imagine if all of a sudden that, you know, gets down, like the if he gets all the details down as well, because even right now without it, he's a absolute star in the making. It feels, talking about the 12th man, it feels like there are 12 men on defense when Edgerrin Cooper is out there, because he is so insanely fast. It is, you know, in a league full of the most ridiculous athletes in the world, you get a guy like that that's on the field. And then sometimes it's like, yeah, Jahmyr Gibbs or Tyreek Hill looks like faster than everyone else. Like, yeah, okay, they're a playmaker. When Edgerrin Cooper's out there at linebacker and he's moving at a different speed than everyone else, that really catches your eye. And that just hits different. And he just hits different. And his ability to get sideline to sideline. There's a play early in that game where it was very reminiscent of a play that Paul Bredel and I are along the sidelines on training camp very early on. And Edgerrin Cooper's on the second level, and all of a sudden he's in the backfield, and we both just stop what we're doing, and we just looked at each other simultaneously, just a very slow turn to one another and be like, oh, that's different. There's a play in this game early on where Geno Smith, I think, quickly realized, oh, how was he there that quickly? That doesn't make sense. How is there a linebacker that was just at the second level a second ago? For you X-Men fans out there, it's like he's Nightcrawler just teleporting to different spots on the field. That's the type of speed that this guy has. And to make that kind of impact, obviously had the hit, and I'm not in any way celebrating Geno Smith going out of the game. I never want anyone to get hurt, period. I wish injuries were off. I wish we could go Madden style and turn injuries off, just because I think it's a better brand of football. I want to see best versus best, and clearly just never want to see anyone want to get hurt, right? But he makes that impactful play that knocks Geno Smith out of the game. That's not even on the stat sheet, right? And then you have, again, multiple TFLs, almost two picks in this game. A huge interception that basically was, and I think actually got Wayne Larrivee's dagger in this one, was the interception for Cooper. So just all over the place. And that is a difference maker. And you go back to the Lions game. I mean, how impactful were Edgerrin Cooper and Romeo Doubs in this particular game? And imagine then inserting those two into that Lions game. That's not taking anything away from the Lions or anything like that. Like, if we want to talk and compare and contrast injuries right now, like, the Lions have had worse injuries than any other team in the NFL. And certainly Aiden Hutchinson and others would have helped the Lions a ton in that game too. So I'm not saying anything like that, but it just shows you, I mean, how impactful Edgerrin Cooper and Romeo Doubs can be. And this team is different with those two guys in the lineup. But I thought this was a coming out party for Edgerrin Cooper. And we've already seen some really big Edgerrin Cooper moments, but I didn't think we've seen a complete and total performance like that, where it just felt like he was everywhere on defense. It looked like he was just, again, taking that game over. And it was a star-making performance from Coop. Number three, we've been talking about it over and over. You're probably sick of hearing about it from myself and probably every other Packers, you know, analyst, whatever. The pass rush. It has to be better. It has to be better. It has to be better. Well, last night, 7 sacks, 12 quarterback hits. And you go back, and one of the things I mentioned, I think here on the radio show, but certainly on the podcast, was, hey, watch the offensive line for Seattle early in this game. Take your eye off the ball and look at how the Packers defensive front is doing against Seattle's offensive line. Because Seattle's offensive line, not very good. Like, we can be real about it. This is not like they went out and, you know, beat up the Lions offensive line or something like that. But they went up against a line that was a little bit vulnerable, and they finally took advantage of it. And I thought early on, the Packers defensive front was getting after it. I thought this is one of the best, not one of, this was the best that they have looked all season long. And they're going to have to continue that. They're going to have to do that against better offensive lines as well. But they took advantage of it in this game. And that was the first time, regardless of whether it was a good offensive line, bad offensive line, decent offensive, whatever, they just went out there and completely outplayed the opposing offensive line. I love seeing it from Brenton Cox. I thought Kingsley Enagbare had a huge game. Rashawn Gary with a sack. Devontae Wyatt with a sack. Carl Brooks with a sack. Like, that, it was just a complete total performance from that defensive front. Obviously got some help from the linebackers as well, talking about specifically again Edgerrin Cooper there. But I thought the defensive front was the best they looked all year. And I talked about it. That is a prerequisite to this team making a significant playoff run, is being able to get home with 4 people. And we talk about Jeff Hafley. How much easier is it for him as a defensive coordinator? How much easier does it look when you've got a 4-man rush that can actually go out and win against the offensive lineman up front? I mean, yeah, it's a lot easier when you can cover with 7 and get immediate pressure with 4. That's a recipe for success for just about anyone. And that Green Bay showed it last night. And hopefully that's something they can continue, regardless of whether it's against good offensive lines, bad offensive lines, that needs to continue. But that was a huge sign for that Packers defense last night. We also have talked about getting off to a strong start and how important that is. 14-0 lead right out of the gate. And I loved that opening drive by Green Bay. We talked about a little bit about just kind of setting the tone early and just running the ball right down Seattle's throat. I mean, that set the tone. Now, they didn't have what I would consider a great running game the rest of the night, but being able to go in there with Josh Jacobs and just say, we're going to feed Josh Jacobs. There's nothing you can do about it. And we're just going to go down and score a touchdown drive. They literally did the, we want the ball and we're going to score, but they actually executed on it. And it did feel like they exercised some Seattle Seahawks demons in this game. Some callbacks. We want the ball. And obviously that was a Seahawks demon, not a Packers demon, but it's an interesting callback nonetheless. The number 56, I don't know how many people had flashbacks of this, but the 56 with about 4 or 5 minutes left in the game, getting an interception. I was just waiting for Morgan Burnett to tell him to go down. And I was like, somebody to tell him to go down. I was going to lose my mind. I'm just like, no, let that guy go. Do not tell him to go down. And they didn't tell him to go down. There wasn't a Fail Mary in this game, but Jordan Love had the little mini Hail Mary to Tucker Kraft, and that was a little bit of an exercise of a demon. So they went into Seattle and had all these bad things that have happened in the past. They didn't let anything affect them. They were the ones that were dictating in this game, and again, exercised some of those Seattle demons in this one. But getting off to the strong start definitely helped. And then getting that quality road win. And yes, Sam Howell got in the game, and Geno Smith definitely looked a lot better. Once Sam Howell got in, it was pretty ugly for Seattle's offense at that point. But even still, they went in there and they got a quality victory against a potential playoff team, a team that was in the playoff picture going into that game that had, again, everything to play for. They took care of business on the road. And as Chris Collinsworth pointed out last night, and as we've talked about right here on the show, if they want to make a run, they're going to be the wild card team, right? So they are going to have to get three consecutive wins on the road if they want to make that special run to the Super Bowl. This was, I think, a good step in the right direction to show that you could go into a semi-hostile environment. Although, again, we did shout out the Packers fans that were there, but still a really tough road environment, pick up a win and just show that they can go out and do that on the road. Because listen, every game in the wild card might be tougher, or in the playoffs might be tougher than what that game was last night, but it still is a nice showing that they can go into Seattle and get a win like that. They'll have an even tougher one coming up in a couple weeks against Minnesota on the road. Would love to see them pick up that win as well. But a very, very impressive 30-13 win over Seattle. We've got a lot to go over in this one. Again, we are going to be talking to Ryan Horvat in just a moment, breaking down every aspect of this game. We will get to your questions, comments, concerns, hot takes in our final segment of this one as well. So plenty to get to in this game. If you missed anything that happened on any of your favorite shows on The Fan, if you're looking for a specific interview, no problem whatsoever. Simply download and listen for free on the Odyssey app or go to thefanmilwaukee.com and catch up on anything that you might have missed. Make sure, of course, to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at The Fan Milwaukee. We'll be right back with Ryan Horvat right after this. This is the Packaday Radio Show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook.
That's right.
Not necessarily. It was a moment where I was indecisive and then didn't want to call timeout because too much time had ticked off the clock, and then I should have called timeout and didn't. It was just poor management and something that can't happen.
We are back. It's Victory Monday. I am in such a good mood. How could you not be after that win over the Seattle Seahawks? This is, again, the Packaday Radio Show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. I am Andy Herman. Thank you for making the Packaday Radio Show part of your daily routine. Reminder that we've got the Mason Crosby Show coming up next with Mitch Nellis. I am counting down the moments. I just have a feeling Mitch has got his A game going today. I'm ready for some spicy Mitch Nellis hot takes coming out of that game. I'm excited for 9 to 11 today right here on The Fan with Mason and Mitch. It's going to be epic per usual, but you know what's going to be epic right now? Ryan Horvat from BetMGM tonight. You can find him on Twitter at Ryan Horvat. Ryan, how the heck are you doing, my friend?
Andy, like you said, man, it's hard to be in a bad mood today. I woke up and I got my Packers pajamas on. I got the pajama pants. I'm ready to roll for the day. I'm ready to talk trash at work because my team won. Everybody else's team lost. I feel pretty good about everything like that's going down right now, the way things are shaking out, man. I kind of predicted this coming into the season where there would probably be some growing pains, especially early on in the defensive side of the ball with Jeff Hafley taking over. And then things would kind of look the way that we want them to look. And last night, man, standalone primetime game, the Packers look damn good. And I think they're a real threat in the NFC. So it's hard to be in a bad mood today.
Yeah, I totally agree. See, I can totally say I saw this coming as well. I'm very thankful that Tommy did not play my prediction from the end of the show last week. I may have thought that this was going to be one of those learning moments. I'm very happy that it was not. Packers have some things that they can learn from this one, but it was still an awesome victory over the Seahawks. All right, let me just ask you this, Ryan, to start off super simple but super important. What were your key takeaways from this Packers win over the Seattle Seahawks?
I like being aggressive early on. I like when LaFleur goes out there, takes the football first, and the offense was balanced, but they build a lead. They never look back, right? And Jordan Love, I love the play calling, right? I mean, Jordan Love was crisp last night, 20 for 27, 229 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. He had one big-time throw. I have to go back and watch the game again. I did not even see a turnover-worthy play.
There wasn't.
And then Josh Jacobs. You know, my biggest takeaway was, I said they win this game if they're able to get pressure. Geno Smith, when he's kept clean, is a top 15, top 10 quarterback in the league. When he's under pressure, that's when the metrics dip. They actually were able to get pressure. They knocked Geno out of that game, unfortunately. And then we see Sam Howell. And then on the offensive side of the ball, I said they have to get the ground game going. And it sounds like if you look at the season-long metrics, it sounded like last night should have been a game for Josh Jacobs to eat. But really the last 4 weeks, 5 weeks, the Seattle run defense has been much improved, man. And I'm a big fan of Mike McDonald. I love that coaching hire. I love what he did with his defense in Baltimore. They've gotten healthier up front. Also, their secondary's got much healthier since they got Reek Wollen back. Devin Witherspoon was playing a couple weeks through an injury. So the Seattle defense has actually been, you know, really damn good the last month of the season. So I was surprised the way that they were able to run the ball. I love the play calling. So that was my biggest takeaway. They were able to actually get pressure on Geno Smith, and they were able to run the ball for 4 or 5 yards per carry and really dominate in the trenches. And I think that was the key going into last night's game, to be the tougher, more aggressive team.
Yeah, it really felt that way, and it did set the tone early, and Seattle never came close in that game. Again, there were some few anxious moments where they're only up by 10, and they're punting the ball away, and it's just like, can you not play with your food for a little bit? But it was never close. It never felt like Seattle had any real legitimate chance to win that game. In fact, Green Bay had 14 points in their first two drives. Seattle had 13 in the game. It was just never really a true game. But you kind of talked about that play calling. If there was a critique of this game, I know a lot of people saying, hey, you know, I really wanted to see the Packers kind of keep their foot on the gas. We heard Matt LaFleur just a moment ago in the intro there talking about how, you know, at the halftime or right before half, they didn't manage it correctly. It was one of the more interesting, I'll just say, two-minute drills that I've seen in his entire time in Green Bay so far, just not maybe executing at the level that they're used to. What did you think about Matt's kind of play calling in the middle of this game where they had the lead, had the opportunity to maybe be a bit more aggressive, took a more cautious approach, and it did kind of go through that lull in the middle where they just couldn't really get much going?
Yeah, great point. I mean, the scripted stuff was really dang good. And then, you know, that's usually my only issue if I ever have an issue or anything to, like, critique LaFleur on a Monday morning. It's usually the in-game decision-making. When to throw a challenge. Whoever's in charge of that needs to be fired, or we got to get some help on that when Matt LaFleur actually throws the challenge flag. But, yeah, I wanted them to keep their foot on the gas, to stay aggressive. But I also kind of understood what they were doing. Now, the two-minute drill. I have no clue. I got to go back and watch that once again. I mean, they're just walking to the line of scrimmage. It looked like Jordan Love, like, wanted to change the play last minute there. But, yeah, that's on LaFleur. I have an issue with that a little bit, especially, you know, if you're playing a team like Detroit, if you're playing a team, you know, like Philadelphia in the playoffs, you know, that's, you got to get 3 on the board. You got to try to get 6 on the board, and you got to work, get up to the line of scrimmage. So I did have an issue with that. And sometimes I do have a problem with the in-game decision-making, but the scripted stuff for LaFleur is always great. I understood what they were doing, kicking the field goals, right, and not being super aggressive, not going full Dan Campbell, because you want to keep a 3-score lead against Seattle because of the way the defense was playing, especially, right? Like, I wasn't worried about Geno Smith or Sam Howell putting together a drive because they were able to get pressure. They held their own against the, not having Kenneth Walker, I know, really hurt Seattle, but they were able to kind of limit the stuff on the ground. So, yeah, minor critique. They have to keep their foot on the gas, be more aggressive, but, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just happy for the win. But, yeah, that would be probably my only issue with LaFleur last night.
Yeah, it was interesting. I am totally with you. I thought the field goal decisions, while not the sexiest, were super important. You're not getting any extra points if you win this game, you know, 50-3 or something like that. Like, your goal is to get out of Seattle with a win, and keeping it a 3-possession game, especially when they had a backup quarterback in, was the smart play. It's not necessarily going to win you any, you know, points, whatever, but, like, you win the game, and that's the most important thing. I thought those were the right decisions, and I thought for the most part he made sound decisions, even if it wasn't, again, maybe the most sexy thing in the world as you're watching it live. Let's talk about that Jordan Love and his efficient day. I thought it's interesting, and this is, to me, maybe a little bit of a sign of, like, oh yeah, he's made it, because he goes 20 of 27, 229 yards, 8.5 yard average, 2 touchdowns, no picks, a 123.8 passer rating. And it was like, yep, that was a good Jordan Love day. Doesn't even, to me, like, measure on the radar of, like, great Jordan Love games or anything like that. And to me, that's, like, the biggest sign of respect of, like, that's just kind of the game that I expect from Jordan Love. And to your point about turnover worthy plays, we're talking about now post bye week. You know, you have obviously that Bears game to begin with for Green Bay. And then if you kind of look at the schedule from there, you got the 49ers, the Dolphins, the Lions, and the Seahawks. We're 5 games in post bye. Arguably 2 turnover worthy plays. The one where he just misses to Tucker Kraft that actually ended in an interception. And then the one the week after where he, against the 49ers, where he doesn't see the defender undercutting Christian Watson, and Christian Watson's kind of got to play defensive back on the play. But we're talking about 5 games, 2 turnover worthy plays, and we're talking about none in the last 3 games now. And juxtapose that to the beginning of the season where he was, you know, constantly making some decisions that were making you scratch your head, and oh, he's just a gunslinger, he's gonna make this. He has taken such better care of the football. I thought this was a super efficient day from Jordan. What did you think from his day at the office yesterday?
Yeah, it's starting to remind me of last year, right, where the first 8 weeks of the season, it was kind of like, home run ball or bust. And so there were a lot of deep shots down the field. And then they went into the bye the second half of the season, really after the Detroit game especially. I just thought Matt LaFleur's play calling was much better. And what I liked from Jordan was, even at Utah State, you know, when you watched him that last year and he led the nation in turnovers, it was kind of the same thing. You could tell he didn't really trust the personnel. They lost a ton from the team that he played on the year before. But he started using the intermediate stuff last year. Like, you know, everything doesn't have to be a home run ball. You could check down. You could use your tight ends. You could make those throws in the middle of the field. And that's when, obviously, you know, the numbers were much better. He was the number two quarterback in the league the second half of the season. That's what we're seeing again. So last night, I think that's the perfect Jordan Love game. Right, I don't think he needs to throw for 350 to 400 yards. I love seeing 20 for 27, 229, two touchdowns, no sacks, no picks. 90.1 QBR is fine with me. And I like the way that he spread the ball around too, right? Like Christian Watson has three receptions. I like Christian Watson's role on the team now where he's actually healthy. He's still the deep threat, the vertical guy. I know his route tree's expanded, and I know he still struggles with drops occasionally and staying out of field, but I have liked what I've seen from him the last couple weeks. You know, Josh Jacobs, four receptions out of the backfield, they really made it a plan to get him the ball last night. You know, 26 carries and then four receptions. I like to see that. Dobbs had a big night, 3 for 40. Kraft, 2 for 34. So that's what I liked, man, was Jordan Love last night was just playing point guard, spreading the ball out to all of his playmakers. And it's so hard to game plan for that. It's so hard to game plan for Green Bay. I know they're the youngest team in the league, but there's just so many guys that could step up and make a play in the tight end room, the running back room, the receiver room. And so I thought that was the perfect Love game, man. And I really liked the way that he played last night. I'll take that every single week. He doesn't have to have the flashiest numbers for me. I'll take that every single week.
I know the initial like game manager moniker came in like the, you know, Trent Dilfer of like, can he just manage the game enough to let the defense win and stuff like that? Man, I want a game manager like the vast majority of the game, every single, I want, like you said, a point guard, just a distributor, let the playmakers do the heavy lifting. Don't put that Superman cape on until you need it. Like then there's in certain moments when you need it, go out and show that you can do that. And he consistently does that as well, making the big plays when you need it. And I think that's, again, that's the right recipe for success. If you can rush Josh Jacobs and be efficient there, and then you can just get the ball out of your hands, let your playmakers do the heavy lifting, and then when you need that big play, go out and make it. That's what we've seen from Jordan Love, and I think that I totally agree with you. That's when he's at his best, especially in this Matt LaFleur offense. We're going to be joined by Ryan Horvat right now. Bet MGM tonight. You can find him on social media at Ryan Horvat. I want to talk about one of those other wide receivers, a player who made a big return last night, and that was Romeo Doubs. I thought his impact his play in this game was super impactful. He has, of course, the two touchdowns. I thought the last touchdown reception was a beautiful play by Romeo. The big slant that led to a touchdown, a great run after the catch on that one. Drew a pass interference play. Just a efficient day, but a really impressive day from the returning Romeo Doubs.
Yeah, seals the game with that second touchdown of the night. And I just, man, I kind of love the role that they've carved out ever since whatever was going on in the beginning of the season, right? And that's kind of what you need. Like, if you watch the Philadelphia Eagles, A.J. Brown's awesome, but he's the man beater. Devontae Smith's the zone beater. And you need that possession receiver, the guy that could run the underneath routes. And I love that from Romeo Doubs. Also, the other thing I like about all these guys, including Doubs, is they block downfield, too. If you watch, you know, Sunday Ticket, NFL Red Zone, you're going to see a lot of NFL wide receivers that don't want to get dirty out there. You know, now that all the drama's behind these guys, man, I love the skill set on all these guys. You know, I obviously they have to limit the drops, right? This team drops way too many footballs. But getting Doubs back last night I thought was so big. You need him fully healthy for a playoff run. If Green Bay is going to make a run to the NFC Championship game, to the Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl, I know, you know, if you're looking at, like, the betting market, they'll say, well, he's just a wide receiver. I disagree. I think he's much more important. And I trust Romeo Doubs. He's come up with big play after big play since coming back. Getting him back on the field with the guardian cap. I love those damn things. I thought he played really well last night. Again, like, these numbers aren't going to jump off the page. It's not going to say 8 receptions, 10 receptions, 140 yards every week, especially when you're able to run the ball for 5-6 yards per carry. And there's a reason why you brought in Josh Jacobs and paid him all that money at 26 years old. But man, like, if Doubs does that every week, 4 receptions, 40 yards, catches a couple touchdowns, I'll take that. I think he's one of the more underrated receivers in the league.
Yeah, I think he showed his value last night, exactly what you need from him in a game like that. And when you get some of those man-to-man opportunities, he can just go out and beat it. And I think Jordan has a lot of confidence throwing to him. Speaking of big returns in that game, we spent a lot of the first segment talking about the play of Edgerrin Cooper. Let me just ask you this. How good can Edgerrin Cooper be for this Packers defense?
So that was my favorite draft pick, and I'm not just saying this because, you know, it looks good now, but that was one of my favorite picks, man, probably in the last decade. Like, I always want a guy. Like, I wanted Cooper Dejean for the Packers, and I knew it probably wasn't going to happen. But when I actually heard them select Edgerrin Cooper, I was jacked. So I just think that this guy, and I've been saying this for the last 2 years, I think his ceiling is so high. And if you didn't know who he was before last night, you know, just as a football fan, I think you know now, right? Like, he was targeted 5 times, I believe, in coverage that I counted. Only gave up 1 reception for 1 yard. For Green Bay, this has really been an issue for the past decade, right? Like, linebackers in coverage, you could always kill Green Bay on the ground, of course, but opposing tight ends have torched the Packers for years. So having a guy like Cooper out there, I think, is big, man. You know, doesn't miss many tackles, had a tackle for a loss, had a sack in the game, had a quarterback hit, and he only played, I believe, on 3 pass rush snaps as well. So I'm a big fan of Edgerrin Cooper and his ceiling. I think he could be one of the better defensive players in the NFC for years to come, as long as he stays healthy, as long as they have the right role for him. But he's only going to continue to get better. Getting him back was huge, and I love what I saw from him last night. I thought he was the player of the game, defensive game ball for Cooper last night for sure.
Yeah, he was. I think, the overall player in the game. I mean, just an absolute stud in only 34 snaps, as we kind of mentioned at the onset. What he was able to do in that game, 7 tackles, 1 sack, 2 TFLs, 2 PBUs, 2 QB hits, an interception, just all over the place. And you can just feel his impact every single time he's on the field. It is a night and day difference how that defense feels when he is on the field and when he is not on the field. And I know they're probably, you know, kind of taking care of him last night, coming back from injury, and still think they maybe don't want to put too much on his plate, but that 34 snaps needs to be pretty much every snap moving forward, because he's just too impactful when he's out there. Speaking of the defense, is this pass rush alive? Is this something that they can continue, or do they just face a really bad Seattle offensive line?
See, that's what I'm asking myself this morning, right? Because, I mean, if that pass rush is alive, this is a team that could win the Super Bowl. I hate to be cliche, right? But, like, if you could run the football, especially in cold weather games, and if you could get after the quarterback, you're going to make a run. That's how Kansas City continues to do it, man. It's not just Pat Mahomes throwing deep balls anymore. Like, that's not the Chiefs' offense anymore. It's Isaiah Pacheco using the tight ends, which Green Bay can do, and it's been that Kansas City defense, mainly that pass rush and that secondary. If you get Jaire Alexander back healthy and you're able to get pressure on 35% of dropbacks, I think that this team could legitimately win the Super Bowl in the NFC, man. I think we're overhyping the Lions just a little bit, and yesterday kind of proves that. Do you really trust Dan Campbell, right, to not be too aggressive? Philadelphia, I think, can be beaten, as we saw Week 1. You know, that game was played on a slip and slide, unfortunately, in South America. I'd love to see that game played again. So if that pass rush is alive, I think this team is legit. But that's been Seattle's issue all season long, right? Like, Geno Smith, I keep joking every week on our show that he deserves some MVP looks, just because imagine what he would be able to do behind a clean pocket, man. He's under pressure on like 40% of his dropbacks. I want to see it another week and then another week after that, especially when they step up in class, when they play a team like Detroit with a real offensive line. But, man, I like what I saw last night. It comes down to, like, can they get natural pressure? Does Halfley have to keep dialing up the blitz? But that was encouraging last night. But I worry it was just, you know, kind of a product of playing the Seattle Seahawks and their offensive line, which is, like, outside the top 20 right now in pass pro.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. We are being joined right now by the great Ryan Horvat of BetMGM Tonight. You can find him on Twitter, at Ryan Horvat. One last one for you, Ryan, before we get you out of here. Packers have the Saints coming up next. They have 3 games left in the regular season. They technically have not clinched yet. However, they are greater than a 99% chance to make the playoffs per the New York Times simulator. What are you looking for from the Packers in that Saints game and as they finish up in their final 3 regular season games here?
So for the Saints game, you just can't have a letdown, right? I mean, I know that's, again, cliche to say, but you go back home, you have that game, it's the Christmas season, you just got to make sure everybody's focused, because right now the Saints are beat up, man. You're going to be able to take advantage of their secondary. They traded away Lattimore, and they weren't very good with him on the field, that pass defense. They're old on that side of the ball. So I think Jordan Love's probably going to have some clean pockets. I think they're going to be able to get the ground game going. Offensively, I have no worries for Green Bay in that game. And then defensively, it should be another game where, you know, you look damn good, because the Saints yesterday started Jake Haener. He didn't make it out of that game. They went to Spencer Rattler. So either way, you're going against a rookie or second-year quarterback. You're going to be able to get pressure. You're going to want 3-4 sacks, a couple turnovers in this game, and just avoid the letdown spot, because then the next week, you got a big one against Minnesota, and you got to go on the road. I think that's one of the toughest places to play. We're all talking about Detroit, man, and I feel like nobody's talking about Minnesota. I wouldn't be shocked if they end up winning the division, man. They got a big game against Austin and a big game against Detroit. I give Kevin O'Connell all the credit in the world. Him and Matt LaFleur, I think, are the best coaches in the NFC. That defense is legit. They have so many weapons to game plan for. So that's the game for Green Bay. You got to beat Minnesota. On the road, I know it's going to be tough, but I think that they'll be able to do it. I think there's a chance they rattle off three straight to close out the season. They're one of the hottest teams in the league going into the playoffs, and I really think they're contenders, man. I think right now, if I had to make a bet or a pick in the NFC, it would be the Green Bay Packers or the Philadelphia Eagles. I always look at teams the way that they're trending, and right now Detroit has too many injuries, and I just, man, to be honest, crazy as it sounds, in the playoffs, I think I trust Jordan Love more than I do Jared Goff.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have a hot take coming up in segment three about the Detroit Lions, so I'll tease that one a little bit. But I have a hot take about them coming up. It's going to be a good one. Ryan, where can we find all of your incredible work, and what do you got going on this week?
Yeah, this week I'll be on the show Monday through Friday. I bet MGM tonight, which is on the Odyssey app. You can stream it. I believe we're on Twitch and YouTube. 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern, so 6 to 10 if you're on the Central time zone. And then I do the Zach Gelb show with him every Sunday on the CBS Sports Network, or Infinity Sports, they call it now. So I'm over there at 10 a.m. and, on Twitter at Ryan Horvath.
Ryan, we'll have to do it again sometime. This is the absolute best. Love chatting Packers with you, whether I'm on your show, you're on this show. At any time, it's always fun, so I appreciate you a ton. Like I said, we'll have to definitely do it again soon. Enjoy your victory Monday. When we come back, we are going to be going to the phone, so get those phone calls into the Nicolay Law Fan Talk and text line 414-677-1250. It's the Packaday Radio Show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. We'll be right back.
Man, I see the work that they put in each day, the way that they go about it with the right attitude, you know, the right state of mind. I mean, we got ballers on this team, man. We play complimentary football today, and I love it.
We are back right here on the Packaday Radio Show on this Victory Monday, live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, and of course, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. A huge thank you again to Ryan Horvath for coming on in segment two. That was awesome. Definitely going to have to do that again in the near future. Always great chatting with Ryan and getting all of his takes on Green Bay Packers or really anything NFL. He's always got his A game going. All right, as I mentioned, want to get to those phone calls and Twitter questions right on the Nicolay Law Fan Talking text line 414-677-1250. We've got from two things over on the text stream. Yesterday proves that the Packers have the talent to take it to any team. That Seattle team is no slouch, and for the Pack to hand it to them the way that they did at home is a statement. Yesterday also proves that LaFleur does not need to reinvent the offensive wheel to start games. Simple plays opens up the defense to mistakes, to where you can draw up some new schemes to attack those weak points. Appreciate the text. To me, I already felt like this Packers team could beat anyone on any given day. And I think even in a loss against Detroit, you saw that. Obviously, you'd like to see a win to prove that they can win any game, but I thought they were right there with Detroit. So this to me is not a super surprising outcome. I don't think we necessarily learned anything new, but it's nice to get that big victory on the road in Seattle, especially in convincing fashion. So definitely agree with that aspect of it. And then yes, I think Matt LaFleur does a ton of amazing things. And again, you start seeing these 30-point performances add up game after game after game. And there's still those lulls. There's still some things that they can do to be a bit more consistent, but we've kind of talked about it. Ryan talked about it. The more you can kind of keep it simple, run the football, get the ball out of Jordan Love's hands, let the playmakers do the heavy lifting, don't turn the ball over, don't put the Superman cape on until you need to. The offense is going to be really, really tough to deal with, and they're going to be in really good situations if you can consistently do that. We saw it yesterday, and another 30-point performance from the offense. So impressive, and I do think that this is, again, a little bit more proof of concept of what they can do, especially on the road. So you love seeing that. A couple other takeaways from yesterday. The Bears were eliminated from the playoffs. It is official. Even when they don't play on Sunday, they still find a way to lose, and they are officially eliminated from the playoffs. So you love to see that. And here's my hot take that I teased about the Detroit Lions. Are you ready for this, Tommy? Are you ready for a spicy hot take?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right, here we go. The Lions are done. It's over. I honestly do not believe that they can make it back from all the injuries that they have. And it's brutal. I feel for them legitimately with already all the injuries that they had on defense. Aleem McNeil and Carlton Davis, their top interior defensive lineman, their top corner, are likely out for the season per Dan Campbell. They already are without Aiden Hutchinson. They're already without Marcus Davenport. They have a ton of injuries through the entirety of their defense. I don't think you can come back from that. And I think we've seen it really over the course of the last couple of weeks. Green Bay dropped 30 on them, should have been more. Buffalo dropped 40 plus on them, probably should have been more. Like this, and there's a reason Dan Campbell's going onside kicks with 12 minutes left. He knows his defense cannot get stops. That is not something that you can win the Super Bowl with. And listen, they have a really great coach, defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator. Their offense is really, really good. They can hang 40 points in pretty much any given week. I loved how they battled against Buffalo yesterday despite being down. They never quit in that game. I'm not saying that they're going to be an easy out for anyone. And I'm not saying I think that they, I guess theoretically could put some. I think they're too beat up on defense to make any sort of run at this thing anymore. To me, they are no longer the favorites to win the Super Bowl. And to me, if they are healthy, if every team is healthy, if every team is, again, we get to go Madden style and turn all injuries off. I think Detroit is the overwhelming favorite to win the Super Bowl. Just like to me that they are the best team in the NFL. But with the injuries that they have on defense, I don't think they can do it. And I will give all the credit in the world if they make some sort of run and bounce back from this and still are able to put together a Super Bowl performance without all of those playmakers on defense. And listen, they still have two great safeties in Brian Branch and Kirby Joseph. There's nothing else that scares me on that defense. I mean, they better get an unbelievable performance out of Za'Darius Smith the rest of this year, and he just goes absolutely off somehow. Even that, again, he's just one guy along the defensive front. You can probably take that away, and I don't see that coming around the corner. I don't see that type of performance is coming from Za'Darius Smith. I think that they are legitimate. Like, I think their Super Bowl odds are completely down, and I think it's over. I don't think they can win it with the state of that defense. And they've got some really bright minds in that in Detroit. I don't think they can overcome it. And I'm obviously not going to be cheering for them, but I will absolutely eat my words if that comes to fruition. And they're a really good franchise right now. I just think they're way too beat up. So that's my hot take, Tommy. What's your initial reaction to that?
Yeah, my initial reaction is to agree with you, kind of. I do think that, yes, their Super Bowl odds plummet after the injuries that they suffered yesterday. But the good news for Lions fans, I mean, this offense can still score every single time they have the ball. I know it's going to put a lot of pressure on them with how banged up their defense is, and you saw the Bills take advantage of that yesterday, but I still think that the Lions, if they're not the favorite, should be in the top two or three. I still think they would beat the Eagles today.
Here's my thought on it. I think they can still beat anyone, right? Like if it's Packers, Lions in the playoffs, Detroit's going to have every right to win that game. I do think it's going to be very important how they close this season, because to Ryan's point, like they're not guaranteed the one seed. They're not even guaranteed the division, right? Like I could see Minnesota winning that division. If Detroit has to go on the road, that changes everything. My overarching take here is I don't think they can win that style consecutively to go on a Super Bowl run. I don't, because they just have to outscore everyone every week. If Jared Goff has one bad game, like I don't think that they have the defense that can just kind of keep them in those games. You have to be able to win on a variety of different ways come postseason time. And I think their only way to win in through the remainder of the playoffs is going to be that they just have to outscore everyone. And maybe they can do that. Maybe their offense is that good. Maybe Ben Johnson is that smart. I just don't think that you're going to go on an epic run through the playoffs and just be able to outscore everyone every single time. I don't see if he's that. Maybe they get to the Super Bowl and they lose it there or whatever, but I don't think you can make that sort of run with it being that beat up on defense. I just don't think you can do it. Let's see what John and Franklin thinks. We've got John and Franklin on line one. John, how are you doing, my friend? And your takes from this Packers game.
Well, I'm just doing fantastic. I did feel this was a game, the Packers should win. Didn't necessarily think it was going to be easy, so it was actually easier than I certainly thought it would be. Very impressive performance. A couple of points. After all the weeping and crying and all the stuff with the talking heads and the announcers with the Detroit injuries, very little was made about the
Packer injuries. And I thought maybe they were not as numerous, obviously, short of Hutchinson, but ours were extremely key injuries. Cooper was a huge loss with Alexander out, with our third down receiver going into a hostile environment. Look what that produced for us. So I was so glad when these, and I felt very, you know, just elated to see this team starting to look like, you know, somewhat healthy and starting to see what we can get out of these guys, even though we were still down 23. And I think he's coming back next week, and I look forward to him and Jefferson going at it. I know LaFleur didn't have a best, he did not have a great strategic game, but when they were putting up the numbers on him, I don't think we give the, I know we gave him credit with Willis, but I mean, I don't think we give this guy enough credit, man. And I was a little bit of a critic of his when he came in. I thought he was too much of a nice guy. But this dude can coach, and we are fortunate to have him.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and I appreciate the phone call, John. Here's one thing that I think some people don't necessarily see, because he doesn't always necessarily show it in public, especially when he's doing press conferences and things like that. One of the things that I'm most impressed by with Matt LaFleur, and I've seen this at practices where it's, again, maybe just open to the media or things like that, he will get after players. Like, he is a player's coach, but, man, he will get after you if you are not doing something correct, and he has no problem whatsoever going all in on getting after a player when need be. And I think he is one of the best, in my opinion, at really, because if you are too much of a player's coach, that can be a bad thing. And if you're too much of a, you know, just curmudgeon and you're constantly going after players, that can be a bad thing too. I think it's the hardest line to walk as a coach in professional sports, is figuring out how you can be on the player side, player's coach, giving them the rest when they need to, having a great pulse on the team, being that sort of rah-rah guy, being there for them when you need them, but also being a bit of a hard ass and getting after them when you need to. And I think Matt LaFleur walks that line better than almost any coach in the league, and I don't think he gets enough credit for it. And again, I think it's because a lot of it happens kind of behind closed doors. When he needs to, he will get after guys, and he does not settle for poor performances, and he does not settle for, like, yep, well, I know it was a bad play, but we'll get him next time. No, he will get after guys. And again, I don't think it gets seen necessarily enough in the public eye, but it, trust me, it happens, and he straddles that line really, really well. All right, Packers would face the Buccaneers if the playoffs were to start today. Packers sit in the sixth seed. Buccaneers are the current three seed. As I mentioned, greater than a 99% chance to win, or sorry, to get into the playoffs. They need one win, and they would get in. There's going to be a variety of scenarios where even if they don't win this week, they could still potentially get in. Would be my guess when we get the official scenarios. And Green Bay in a great spot to clinch a playoff berth sooner rather than later. That should come very, very soon. And with that, let's get to our Potawatomi Sportsbook final thought of the day.
You got to do some smart thinking.
It's time for Andy Herman's final thought of the day.
What are you thinking?
Powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook.
What the hell were you thinking?
You're listening to the Pack a Day radio show on 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan.
I got a couple ones really quick. I think, first of all, we'll kind of end where we began. It wasn't perfect, but the Packers took a step in the right direction. I think we started to get answers to some of the questions. We saw them get to the fast start. We saw them get a big win on the road. We saw them really win, if they needed to, in a defensive manner in this game, holding Seattle to 13 points, 7 sacks, 2 interceptions. Like, this was a big-time defensive performance. They showed that they can kind of win that type of game if they would have needed it as well. The pass rush really showed up. That's something that, as we talked about, is a prerequisite to them going on some sort of run. Again, you love seeing the 7 sacks, the 12 quarterback hits in this one, and then Edgerrin Cooper taking a step, in my opinion, into becoming what I think will ultimately be a star in this league. I think there were some really positive takeaways. And again, as we look at this final stretch of the season, the wins and the losses are important, but you want to see this team be playing its best football and taking that step in the right direction so they can play that way in January. I thought this game was a really solid step in the right direction. And then last but not least, the bonus one here, we get to nitpick a 30-13 win. There are things that we can look at in this game and say, yep, Green Bay should have done better, especially in that middle part of the game. Man, there are teams around the league that would love a 30-13 win against any team on any Sunday for any reason at any location. There are some really bad teams, and they would give anything for that type of performance. And we are lucky as Packer fans that we can look at a 30-13 win and say, like, yeah, that was good, but I think some things could have been better. Yeah, sure, certainly. You would always love it to be better, but we are very blessed. Do not take it for granted that we as fans get to look at a 30-13 win and and still be like, yeah, I think it could have been better, though. And you're right. It could have been better. But I'll take that 30-13 win on the road against a good Seattle team. It's a great victory Monday. I hope you guys all get to enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Nellis coming up next from 9 to 11 right here on The Fan. You can find the Pack-A-Day podcast 365 days a year, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We'll be back tomorrow with Chris Roth from WBAY-TV in Green Bay to break down this game even further. This has been the Pack-A-Day Radio Show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. Enjoy your victory Monday, everyone.